Support for election coverage on KXCV KRNW comes from William Coy's Farm to Table Restaurant at Mazingo Lake, offering fine dining such as braised short ribs, pan-seared salmon, and more. William Coy's would like to say thank you to customers who continue to support local businesses during uncertain times. More information at williamcoy's.com.
Good morning, and welcome back to your morning conversation as we continue our 2020 election coverage here on KXCV KRNW. I'm Jeremy Werner. Before we get into our interviews with other candidates on the ballots, we figured we'd spend some time this week talking about the two amendment issues that Missouri voters will decide on in November. For this conversation, we're joined this morning by Assistant Professor in Political Science at Northwest Missouri State University, Dan Smith. Professor, let's go ahead and start with the one at the top, and that is Missouri Constitutional Amendment Number 1. The text on the ballot reads, and I quote, "Do you want to amend the Missouri Constitution to extend the two-term restriction that currently applies to the governor and treasurer to the lieutenant governor, secretary of state, auditor, and the attorney general?" End quote. So, Professor, is this an amendment where the language is actually pretty straightforward? And why is it that they're looking to limit the terms for these positions?
There's the general concept of term limits, and then there's the specific offices. And the truth is that for the specific offices, I mean, the thought was that the governor especially, but also the treasurer, that there would be more of an inclination for the corruption to come in, for them to become kind of an institutionalized, you know, I'm here all the time, and then make decisions based on the fact that they're trying to get reelected for an extended period. So there was always that with those positions. In fairness, it's a difficult argument to make to single those two out and say that the attorney general doesn't have the same concerns. Lieutenant governor, it's harder to say because lieutenant governor is little more than a placeholder for somebody who's there in case something happens to the governor and wants to run for governor, probably. So you don't have the same issues there. But in fairness, if we're going to have term limits for statewide offices, we should have term limits for statewide offices. So that's the second part. That's the, you know, being consistent and changing them. I could go through what some of the differences, distinctions between the jobs and responsibilities that might make one more than another, but those arguments are largely symbolic more than anything else. The other part is why have term limits at all? And the theory is they get reelected. The easiest way to stop people from getting reelected over and over and over again is to simply say you can't run after a certain number of terms. And there are say that the advantage there is it stops us from having a professional government at those with those positions. I mean, we have them for the state legislature already as well. So it keeps us from having a professional permanent state legislature, sort of. And I say sort of because if you add up the House and Senate, it's a decent number of years you get to work in Jeff City. But the idea is you eliminate the ability of people to basically set up shop down there, and because re-election is not that hard for incumbents, that you're just basically there as long as you want to be. And then that leads to all different types of potential corruption. You know, you're working for the party and yourself, and you're not looking out for the interests of the voters because you generally get re-elected anyway. And then the counter-argument is that's what voting is. And if the public doesn't take the time to investigate, pay attention, and vote people out, well, then that's the public's choice. So, you know, it's basically a way to say we're not going to make that decision anymore at the ballot box. We're going to say there's a cap on the number of terms for everyone who holds statewide office. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for if you're going to do it for one of those offices, do it for all of them.
Professor, some of the supporters of this amendment have made the argument that this amendment will cut down on career politicians in Jefferson City, as well as cut down on lobbyist-influenced corruption in Jefferson City. I'm curious, is that necessarily true, or could amendments like this play into lobbyist hands?
Well, I think honestly, if you look at the research, and again, it's you know, not my area, but I paid enough attention to Missouri specifically, but also other states that have had term limits, it plays in. There's no question it increases the power of lobbyists. I mean, the counter-argument, you know, the theory is it works the other way, that they're going to be very closely connected to the lobbyists. And the reality is you lose the institutional memory, and the lobbyists basically are the ones teaching legislators how to do their jobs. And I'm not exaggerating in the slightest. They have things, they have events and activities. And I know a few years ago there was a bus tour of Missouri, you know, like getting used to what you know, just more familiarity with the rest of the state. And these things were being done by lobbyists. Sometimes the legislators get their pool. Well, I've never been there. What do I do? You get the professionals instead of being, you know, the career state employees, if you will, rather than the elected leaders, are the legislative assistants or legislative aides or the other policy people that work for the parties or for the committees. Those people stay, and the elected leaders come and go, and those people are the ones that end up being the closest advisors to the elected officials, the people they turn to for information. And it actually puts more power in their hands, because every X number of years, you've got a fresh face and brand new people with no experience. And where are they going to get that information they need from? It's going to be the lobbyists. And there's a lot of research to show that lobbyist control increases when you have term limits. And some of that is specific to Missouri. So that is actually what has happened, is we've become more beholden to lobbyists as a result of the term limits. And it's interesting, because that's the exact opposite of why people make the argument, is we don't want, you know, the career politicians. Well, you get career people that aren't the elected, that we don't have the ability to vote out of office, and they're calling the shots. So, you know, I'm skeptical in general of the effectiveness of term limits. I think there's a symbolic effectiveness, a symbolic reason for them that is pretty important. And Missouri is one of the most pro-term limit states in the country. And we've put it in our Constitution. It was struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court, but in our Constitution is a federal unconstitutional language that says that you are required to sign a term limit pledge. If you're elected, you know, to the legislature in Missouri, you're required to sign a term limit, the U.S. Congress or the U.S. House or the U.S. Senate. If you're running, you're required to sign a term limit pledge. That was struck down by a court, but it was put into our Constitution by Missouri voters.
We're talking with Assistant Professor in Political Science at Northwest Missouri State University, Dan Smith. Professor, let's go ahead and turn to the other big amendment on the ballot, and that's Missouri Constitutional Amendment Number 3. The text on the ballot says, quote, "Shall the Missouri Constitution be amended to ban gifts from paid lobbyists to legislators and their employees, reduce legislative campaign contribution limits, and change the redistricting process voters approved in 2018 by transferring responsibility for drawing state legislative districts from the nonpartisan state demographer to governor-appointed bipartisan commissions, modifying and reordering the redistricting criteria," end quote. Just looking at social media and several campaigns right now, there's a lot more focus on this amendment, and I think that's because this amendment changes the Clean Missouri Amendment, which was passed by 62% of the voters back in 2018. And just looking at the amendment itself, it looks like the biggest change is the redistricting process.
If you really look at it closely, that's the only change. I mean, there are a couple of changes to the lobbyists, you know, the donation amounts and stuff. And those changes are so small. The only way you could explain them is that they're symbolic. They're designed to say, see, we're actually making this tougher on lobbyists, we're making it tougher on elected officials. See, this really is about trying to, you know, continue what was done in 2018 about cleaning up some of the potential corruption. But it's, you know, it's $5 on one of them, and it's amounts that aren't going to make a substantive change at all. But they want to roll back the redistricting, and the 2018 took the redistricting. The design, not the final approval of it. That has to be the legislature anyway. That's not changed. But the design of the redistricting plan was taken out of the control of the legislature and the governor, and put into an independent, you know, they've actually created a position for an independent person and team to do that. And they want to put that back under the elected officials. And there would be a commission appointed by the governor, a bipartisan commission appointed by the governor. The truth, and let's be blunt here, the truth is that the legislature, and I could say that it's the majority because they have a supermajority in the legislature and they're looking out for their party's interests, but I'll just say the legislature, because that's what it is. I mean, the legislature as a whole looks at that and says, we're losing our control and our advantage here. We have the power to draw the districts in a way that maintains our electoral advantage. And that's whichever party happens to be in power. This is our way of controlling, gaming the system. And they don't like it being taken away. And the public voted, and it wasn't close. And you're right, it was almost 70%. And less than 2 years, and before we really had an opportunity for it to be used, the legislature says, well, the people voted, now we want, are you really sure? So we're gonna put it to you again and see if, you knew what you were doing the first time. Initiatives usually pass. Not always, but they usually pass. And their idea is, the public did something we don't like, so let's see if we can get them to change their minds. It's a cynical view of politics, and this is not the first time that the Missouri legislature specifically has either tried or actually undermined what the voters did, almost immediately. I mean, we did it with the concealed carry, put that on the ballot for the public. The public voted it down by a pretty wide margin, and the legislature immediately passed the same thing through the legislature. In 2018 with the right to work, just repeatedly trying to get that on the ballot. And there's a certain amount of almost in the bubble, how could the people actually vote this one down? They couldn't have meant it, so let's ask them again. I mean, there's a certain amount of arrogance when a legislature says, well, the people have spoken, but we want to hear it again. Or we don't believe them the first time, and we don't believe them the second time. Maybe the third time we'll believe them.
So would it be fair to categorize Amendment 3 as a trick question?
In part. I mean, because the way the language is written, it sounds like, hey, we're proposing amending the legislature or the way we do the redistricting. And it, in the abstract, if you read it, hey, the governor's going to appoint a bipartisan commission, and this is going to be something that's cooperative. And if you compare it to 2018, it is a return to what we had. It is very much a rollback of what was done in 2018. And then, again, I think that the lobbying questions are there to sweeten the deal and say, hey, yeah, we want these cuts to money to lobbyists or opportunity for lobbyists to influence. So trick question, it's a polite way to put it. I think it's I use the term arrogance. I think it's a distrust of voters. It's an attempt to get voters, a distrust and an assumption that voters don't know what they're doing, that either aren't intelligent enough to know what they're doing the first time or are not intelligent enough to realize what they're doing here. And then you get into how do you name, and so one of the ways to respond to this has been, people trying to rename Amendment 3 Dirty Missouri. We passed Clean Missouri, and now, they, the other people, the legislature is trying to do, Dirty Missouri and bring back the dirty version. So, I'm comfortable using the word dishonest and manipulative and dismissive of the public is the part that bothers me the most. Because, I'm not saying the public is not willing and able to change its mind, but this was widely discussed and debated and covered in 2018. There was pretty high turnout for a midterm election. I mean, the people knew what they were doing in 2018 when they voted for this. And the idea that, well, we've got to roll it back immediately is driven by the self-interest. We don't want to redistrict because we, in the majority, stand to potentially lose some seats. The truth is they're going to lose very few seats if it goes through. And by the way, would I expect anything different if the Democrats had the supermajority? In the state of Missouri, probably not. That's total guesswork. I don't know. I can't speak to the heart and minds of either party, other than just what they do. But I suspect you got a majority. You want to keep your majority. And the reason I say that, by the way, is if you look at the way redistricting is done, it's very difficult to go outside the constitutional parameters that we have in place. And the U.S. Supreme Court has spoken about some of these parameters. You can't have crazy, bizarre districts for partisan outcomes, for race-driven outcomes. And the court has looked at that stuff. Now, the partisan outcomes, you can do it up to a point, but if the districts start looking bizarre, the court has said we can intervene and rule in those cases and find that there's a violation. And the vast majority of these districts are what they are based on population. And you certainly know this. We've got the rural-urban divide. We've got so many of our districts in the state of Missouri are heavily Democratic or heavily Republican. Most of them are Republican simply because of the rural versus the urban. And those aren't going to change. I mean, you're not going to go into a district and redraw it, district after district after district in the name of trying to balance the size of the legislature. That's not going to happen. There are going to be a few districts here and there that are fairly close, that the way they're drawn will probably change by eliminating the goal of partisan advantage in drawing them. But you're not talking about, dramatically changing like half the districts in Missouri. You're talking about a very small number of districts that are likely to be altered as a result of what was passed in 2018. That's just because, this so much of the way it's set up is it's already there. If we drew all the districts around counties, we would be heavily divided. We'd have Republican districts and we'd have Democratic districts, and that's because of population patterns and living patterns, and most of that's not going to change.
Professor Smith, thank you for coming on this morning and talking with us about the amendments that Missourians will be seeing on the ballot this November. Once again, that's Assistant Professor in Political Science at Northwest Missouri State University, Dan Smith. I'm Jeremy Werner, and you've been listening to Your Morning Conversation as we continue our 2020 election coverage right here on KXCV KRNW.